Chapter 31. Friday. Sarah was at her desk by 6:30, surprising even the jaded denizens of the night shift who were agonizingly pecking out their final reports of the day before wandering off to get loaded and fall into bed. The telltale tang of forbidden cigarette smoke hovered in the air. Her desk was monster-free. For a moment she fantasized about gluing monsters to all the detectives' chairs, give them something on which they could perch until they learned respect. Ha, fat chance, she thought. The more immediate problem was to either prove or eliminate Sharp as a suspect. She awaited Siri's arrival with a mixture of dread and anticipation. It was the type of dilemma every supervisor hated, investigating one of their own. She needed to share her problem, but she didn't envy Siri his responsibilities. The worst part was, she liked Sharp. Her private knowledge notwithstanding, everything about him indicated he was an outstanding cop. His Navy discharge had been honorable, and of course there was a reasonable explanation why he hadn't said he was in the SEALs, they were still considered covert ops. In the meantime, she prepared a detailed memo covering everything she'd discovered in Sharp's apartment, including the pictures. She did it in longhand, in a notepad, and put it in her locker. Shortly after 8, Siri arrived, looking as if he'd gone home the night before and fallen asleep fully clothed, rose this morning without looking in the mirror. A heavy stubble covered his chin and his normally dark and sunken eyes were more so. He spotted Sarah's anxious expression at once and motioned her into his office with a nod. Once inside, she pulled the blinds. Siri sat at his desk and began to rummage through the drawers, retrieving a bottle of Alka-Seltzer and a tube of Tums. What? I can just tell by that look on your face. What is it? Joe, there any chance this office is bugged? Siri looked around, as if trying to spot a mosquito. Bugged? By whom? By internal affairs. That's illegal. I'd have whoever did it up before the police commission. Is it that bad? Maybe we ought to take a walk. Detectives and secretaries leaped at them like midway creature features. Chief, you gotta look at this. Chief, you gotta look at that. Siri waved them off with an unlit cigar. Be right back. Keep your shirt on. Back in 5. It'll keep. Sarah slapped a black red Sox hat on top of her pinned up hair. They went out the back, through the motor pool. No Hayabusa. Exiting the cage, they walked down Church Street, toward Ground Zero. Well, I searched Sharp's apartment yesterday. I found 6 swords concealed in a standing safe. What were you doing in Sharp's apartment? Joe. He's a suspect. He collects old swords. He's a master swordsman. I saw him pulverize James Bratton last week in Kendo. There was more. But she couldn't bring herself to share it. Not yet. What if she were wrong? His honor's on my ass. Where do we stand with all this? Don't tell me Sharp's your only suspect. Hecht and Bratton are both collectors. Bratton, I can't see. He doesn't strike me as the obsessive type. But Hecht is. You don't get to be the biggest developer in Manhattan without a certain degree of ruthlessness. Siri pointed his unlit cigar like a howitzer toward 666 Fifth Avenue. Sweet Mother of Christ. You're telling me your only 2 suspects are Sharp and Hecht? I can't tell the mayor that. He's a friend of Hecht's too. And Sharp, Christ, he's vetted. Have you seen his discharge papers? Joe, trust me. I have other reasons I can't go into. So what do I do? Tip internal affairs? Absolutely not. They'll only make things worse. What do you want from me? Your support, as usual. Bigora and Oive. Can we go back? Sarah pirouetted, paused to wait for Siri to catch up. Someone had glued a plastic Elvira to her desk with the word balloon, dear. Mother's in town. Sarah snapped it off, tossed it in the drawer with the others. The surface of her desk now resembled the backside of the moon, there were so many glue craters. Sarah went online and used Google to research reincarnation. Of all the cops in New York City, she was least likely to dismiss reincarnation. Motive? The killer was driven by ambition and bloodlust from beyond the grave to recover his lost Muramasas. New problem, what if the host were innocent? How did she separate Shigeyoshi, if it were he, from the host body? One link spoke of an Oni Yurai ceremony to drive out demons. A gust of Armani Pour Homme tickled her nose. Go away, Baltazar, she said without turning. The Portuguese-American cop, and proud of it, hovered over her left shoulder. Hey fellas, he shouted. Pezzini's researching reincarnation? She's got a hot one? Sarah immediately minimized her screen but the damage had been done. There arose from the detective's bullpen a ululation as from 10,000 drunken college sophomores on South Padre Island during spring break judging a wet t-shirt contest. New York's finest? She spat. If only Katie Couric could see you now. A hush descended like damp fog as Seltzer appeared at the entrance to the detective's bullpen and made his way silently toward Siri's office, radiating chill. Faces turned away. 15 minutes later, Seltzer emerged, once again plunging the bullpen into silence. Sarah waited until he was 5 minutes gone before approaching the boss. Siri was poring over a report when Sarah entered his office. What? He said without looking up. Joe, what did Seltzer want? None of your freaking business. It had nothing to do with you, okay. Did it have anything to do with Sharp? Siri looked up, touch of panic in his brown eyes. No, he stage whispered. Shut the door. She shut the door, even though no one could hear what they were saying. Seltzer don't know nothing about Sharp, and let's keep it that way. I just found out Sharp's moonlighting for Adrian hacked. Did you know about this? Fear licked at her spine. Had she messed up? Yeah, but lots of cops moonlight. Those two got a lot in common. They're both Napanophiles. They're both nuts for those swords. Sharp and Hecht. Sarah couldn't see it. Hecht nurtured his reputation as a playboy, flaunting a string of twine-thin models from the pages of Vanity Fair. Yet, there were whole continents of the developer yet to be explored. Okay, she said. Sorry to bother you. Close the door when you leave. I gotta get some work done. Sarah returned to her desk and Google. There was more material on Hecht than she had time to read, a profile in Fortune, lengthy attacks on anti-capitalist websites lurid with conspiracy, and of course photos of Hecht and his women. Her cell phone thrummed in her leather bag. She took it out. Pezzini. Sarah, it's Derek Sharp. Goosebumps marched up her neck. How could he know? He couldn't know. It was synchronicity, another piece of the puzzle slipping reluctantly into place. Trouble was, she was too close to the board to see the patterns. What's up, Derek? I think I may have stumbled on the break you've been looking for. I'm not comfortable discussing it over the phone. Could you meet me? Where? Hecht Gardens, say around 8 p.m. You can find me in the trailer, inside the gate. Why not now? I'm on duty now. I'm watching a bunch of flying tigers. They're watching a discount electronics store. Something's going down. Later. Click. Flying Tigers were a Viet gang and Sharp was on the gang task force. With a supreme effort, Sarah turned her attention back to her report. Hours dragged by like injured soldiers. Sarah was no master spy. As careful as she'd been, she couldn't be certain she hadn't left behind a clue when she'd tossed Sharp's place. A real paranoid would have left telltales, such as eyelashes pasted over door jams, little pieces of thread tied between cupboard and wall. If he knew, if he were crazy, if he were a killer, maybe he was luring her downtown for other reasons. No, not another cop. But she knew from bitter experience that cops went wrong. She actually preferred a supernatural explanation. If the killer was a ghost, maybe they could contact him via seance. Yeah. And do what? Interview him? She had to look into this Oni-Uri business. At 4:30, a delivery person appeared at the landing with a bundle of flowers asking for Pezzini. A cop pointed at Sarah. The person deposited a dozen roses on her desk, to Baltazar's wolf whistle. Not even Baltazar could knock her off her high as she reached for the little white card. The winter sky breaks. Dissolves into rose petals. No match for your eyes. It was unsigned. Sarah shut her eyes and imagined the sword polisher's powerful, smooth hands at work on her body. Tonight was volunteering, then Sharp. Tomorrow was the mayor's reception. She couldn't wait for tomorrow. She sought connections in the Chalmers, Hecht, Bachman triangle. Was it significant that Hecht and Chalmers had been rivals? As far as she knew, there had never been any personal animosity between them. What was new was the fact that both men turned out to be serious Japanese sword collectors. Small world indeed. If the laser eavesdropping device above David's apartment did report to Chalmers, he would have known when the antiquarian acquired the latest sword. The missing sword. Was it Skyroot? Was that what this was all about? The ghost of a disgraced samurai, forced to commit seppuku, struggling to recover all his swords? It made as much sense as anything else and Sarah had seen weirder. Or was it something more subtle, a dodge to conceal the real motive and target? Who would go to so much trouble? Someone who knew her reputation, that's who. She ran the serial number of the listening device through the manufacturer, Hajira, in Milford, Connecticut. Hajira was owned and operated by an ex-policeman who'd turned to private investigating. Hajira was a small specialty shop turning out electronic eavesdropping devices to order. They were able to tell Sarah that the laser listener on Worth Street had been purchased by Panther Security. Panther Security worked for Chalmers Property Management. Sarah phoned Panther. A secretary answered. Sarah identified herself and asked to speak to Norm Hansen. I'm sorry, Norm has gone home for the day. May I take a message? May I have his cell phone number, please? I don't think I can do that. Ma'am, this is a homicide investigation. My badge number is 259370. Now I'll wait until you get on another line and verify whatever, but I need that number now. And may I have your name, please? There was a pause. Mr. Hansen's cell phone number is 7776895. Thank you. It never failed. Ask a bureaucrat to take personal responsibility, they would crawl under the nearest rock. She dialed Hansen's number. It rang and rang. No help there. At 4, Rubenstein's kid Amelia made the rounds selling Girl Scout cookies. Sarah ordered 2 boxes of the caramel fudge. At 5, she saved her reports, shut down her machine, and packed up. Every Friday night for the past 4 months she'd been volunteering at the Bowery Mission on the Bowery near French Park, ladling fish chowder to rows of foul-smelling orcs, many of whom were afraid to look directly at her for fear they'd self-combust. No one knew she was a cop. She didn't understand why she did it. Yes, she did. She had to make a contribution. Had to know she made a difference. She didn't have kids. The way things were going, she'd never have kids. At least, not until the thing left her. Nor did she often think about kids. But in the past few days, she had been thinking about kids, while berating herself for giving in to soggy middle-class pretensions. Oh sure, marry the guy, settle down in suburbia with 2.3 kids and a Labrador retriever. Dave could take in swords and she could take in dry cleaning. Well, why not? Didn't he say he had a waiting list of several years? Obviously marriage material. But was she? The other side of the equation, she ran screaming, firing over her shoulder, whenever the prospect of bourgeoisie family life raised its ugly head. Not Vince Pezzini's little girl. She wasn't cut out for housewifery. Sarah had been born to adventure. Check and double check. It was a relief to confront the bike which forced her to concentrate. She bungeed her leather bag to the back seat, jammed more gear in the tank bag, zipped her jacket and put on the half-face helmet. Half-face was better, because you were right out there in the open with no intervening sheet of plexi. You could smell the city. Sometimes a good thing, sometimes not. Fighting traffic with all the resources at her disposal, including the sidewalk, she clawed her way to the mission by 5:30 and wheeled her bike right in through the front door, past the lines of silent, gray men cradling smoldering butts, as if against a gale-force wind. Well, if it ain't our own dark angel of mercy, sang Father Heber Finn, from nearby St. Benedict's. Not a big church, but persistent. Father Finn had been administering to the bums since 1968. He'd nearly driven Sarah out with his early entreaties for her to seek confession, but when he realized she was about to bolt, he clammed up. They had an unspoken understanding. He wouldn't bug her about returning to the church and she would continue to assist him every Friday night. She'd considered returning to the church for an exorcism. She envisioned a day when she and the Witchblade no longer got along, like Scott Chalmers and his first 3 wives, and figured the only way to get rid of it would be a full-scale exorcism. Get the man himself, the Pope. Donate the jewelry to the church. What did they call it? The Digitablum? The Vatican had a file on the Witchblade that went back to the very dawn of the church. How ya doin', Father? What's for dinner? Father Finn worked the kitchen with 4 other volunteers, 2 from the church, a big Filipino kid whom he'd taken under his wing, and an ex-con and murderer named Scully who seldom spoke and was gentle as a summer breeze. Oh, and it's a Lord's own supper I've cooked up with me own 2 hands, a hearty chicken and bean soup, plus baked potatoes, and 4 square yards of peach cobbler for dessert. Bean soup, huh? Hope I'm out of here, by the time they go to bed. You will be, darling, you will be. Sarah put on a white apron under which she pinned her badge and her gun. Those were rags. You wore the gun until you got home. For 2 hours she ladled food, carted pots back and forth, and washed dishes, unaware that every time she stepped out of the kitchen into the broad front room, she was being observed through the misty window from across the street, where a tricked-out Celica was snug to the curb.